Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and because of this beer, our livers are withering. Nice.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We're the Drunk Guys, and this week we're reading our patron-selected book of the month, Wuthering Heights by Emily Brontosaurus, and somebody is starting with a beer.
This is a beer.
Fuck. With a bottle.
Like, yeah, I got a bottle.
Jimmy doesn't know how to use.
Fucking... Everyone in this book dies. Sometimes they wake up dead. This is called Wake Up Dead.
I'm opening my beer now just so I can get drunk because I hate this book.
Ooh, good Lord. Oh, Jesus. This is a 10.2% stout. Bold yet smooth with notes of dark chocolate, dried fruit, and coffee. Definitely tastes like dark chocolate because it's pretty bitter.
Heathcliff was dark.
And yeah. Also, that guy in the book is an alcoholic, so there you go.
There was nothing else to do. It's fine.
There really was nothing else to do. Including your cousin.
I wish Emily Bronte had something else to do besides write this fucking book and then
she
died
right after they put it out.
She got the order of operations wrong. She should have died right before she wrote it.
Spoiler. I didn't think it was that bad, but we'll discuss that at the end.
So, Emily Bronte, or... I mean, how are you supposed to pronounce that?
I think it's pronounced Brontë.
Brontë?
it's Bronte, right? It's gotta be Bronte. I mean, I've never heard it any other way.
She wrote this fucking turd in 1847, and I like that her sister, as soon as Emily died, one of her sisters was like, I have to fix that. It's a nice catty sister thing to do. So there's a subtle changes of spelling and punctuation in the second edition. Charlotte, maybe? I don't know.
Charlotte was the big one.
She was the biggest. She got the most.
She was the
protein.
Tallest Bronte.
So yeah, it came out in 1847, and some people really fucking like this book.
It was back not
then,
well liked.
Yeah,
when
they didn't
it
like
out.
It back then
because Jane Eyre had come out the same year and did really well, and then they're like, wait, another sister has a book, and then they published it, and everyone was like, ew,
Yeah, they were right.
This offended their little shitty sensibilities of being proper Victorians. People in this book are mean. None of us are mean.
Now go shine my shoes, peasant boy, before I sell your family into serfdom. So the book takes place in a bunch of different time periods, but all of them being like 40 years before the book came out. Like, it's early 1800s, so it's technically not Victorian.
Actually, like, late 1700s.
Yeah, it's when a lot of the flashbacks
are. The very first start of the book, it takes place in 1801, where the guy who's just visiting Wuthering Heights goes and talks to the lady, and the lady who's the servant who tells the whole story, and then she tells of the events that started 30 years before that, so... Really, the entire book is over by 1801.
Unfortunately, we still have to read it today. But it's the main, it's like a frame, right? So
it's like a frame within a frame within a frame.
It's a Matryoshka novel. So Mr. Lockwood is the guy, and he's a tenant. He's a renter at, well, an estate. And he's at Thrush.
He's gonna rent Thrush Cross
Tush Cross LaGrange. It's a ZZ Top themed one.
He was probably a sharp dressed man.
He was definitely a sharp dressed man.
Yes. So, and they're like,
he's renting a house in the country for the year, because I don't know how old timey society worked at all. And he spends most of that time sick in bed listening to stories.
But because everyone's a dick, which is awesome. He goes there and he's used to the peasants coming over and just sucking his dick, basically. And they're just like, go make your own fire, fuckhead.
He arrives at not Thrush Cross Grange, but Wuthering Heights, the slightly shittier place down the lane where his
4 miles away across
is.
The moor. Oh.
Yeah.
We're going to drink more beer. I've done that.
Oh, damn it.
Shit.
It's all right. But this opening scene... I guess it was supposed to be like scary because of people's manners, but I thought it was pretty funny because
it's just like a
comedy of everything going wrong etiquette wise that you could, especially in old timey ways. There's like, where is the porridge? Like, fuck you, sir. Okay, never mind.
I believe the porridge is in your mother's cunt. Like, oh, wow. That's, that would give it a zing.
Also had this great line where he called the dog a liver-colored bitch pointer, which I know is just a thing, but it sounds funny now.
This there's a lot of too many worded things like that. We're like, you didn't need all those words at all.
Too many words.
It's as if you said, ChatGPT, write me a boring book that's written by the thesaurus. Because every is like, oh man, this is an English teacher's dream for vocabulary word quizzes.
Yes, it is an SAT prep book, the novelization, because it's just all the SAT words.
Did you guys know that slut was a word back then?
Well, yeah. Nate's mom was around back then, so it had to be a word then.
Oh, that's where they made the word.
I, too, was surprised that he, because like he called, because Heathcliff calls Kathy his...
is a slut name.
Yeah, calls Kathy a slut more than once.
It was like, wow, I didn't know people were called that when she wrote this in like the fucking 1840s. I didn't know that word existed. And it didn't mean like an ornery goat or something that like eventually became like a loose woman or anything, you know, some shit like that.
No, they had sluts back then, right?
I mean, but I didn't know they had rakes that word for it.
Had the male version. But
probably just meant like a woman with opinions in this context.
Mm, that's true. The worst kind.
She did only bang one dude this whole book, so.
Well, the servants are all mean to Lockwood, and he's like, I guess I'll just leave.
But also he sees like a hot girl there. He's like, ooh, this girl's interesting because she's pretty. And that's the extent of his characterization. But she's also mean to him. She's like, you can go fuck yourself, sir.
And he goes, then he for some reason has to stay the night. He's like,
no, he goes to the house and then he comes back. Because he's like, surely these people meant to invite me over for supper because we are the only people for 1,000 miles and we are uptight British people. And he gets snowed in and he tries to leave, but he's too stupid and weak. So they make him stay with them and he gets locked in one. They tell him, you have to lock yourself in because I get drunk and I have a gun and I get real angry at night. And he's like, this is normal.
That's the servant. But the servant named, was that Joseph?
Joseph was the servant, yeah.
I try and kill Mr. Heathcliff every night. I try and unlock that door. And if it's ever unlocked, I will murder that man. So you should keep your door locked. And it's like, wow, this is really strange.
I could see this being a horror book back then because of manners. But to me, it seemed like a over-the-top Monty Python sketch of like the worst hotel.
It's an episode of Fawlty Towers.
Which I've never seen, but I believe you're...
Oh, it's great.
It's funny, yes. Yeah. I've really heard it's good.
And it's only like 10 episodes. You can crank it out in the afternoon.
So Mr. Lockwood...
But then he finds a book.
He has to stay the night in the snowstorm. And because it's the moors in the 1770... Or no, in 1801, there is absolutely nothing to do. And no one at the house actually likes him. So they just like, he just is kind of locked in his room and he's like, why don't I read these books? And he sees on the books, there's all this like handwriting, somebody took a lot of notes and stuff like that. But then he finds a journal of a woman who's been dead for a while now named Catherine.
And her name is carved into the windowsill or something?
Yeah.
All over the place. He's like, man, someone was fucking emo in here.
At the time, I thought maybe I just wasn't reading clearly, because it was very long, and it's already long even at the beginning. Do we think that this is the journal of the girl, Catherine? Because they have the same name, we learned later.
Oh, yeah. I started drawing out a family tree of who these characters were, and then I stopped caring.
But, I mean, like, at the time, you're like, oh, he's reading Catherine's journal, because he wants to learn about this little...
Well, because he's like, who's the girl?
I'm pretty sure Catherine it was the dead Linton. Catherine. Yeah, no, it was Catherine Earnshaw.
But do we as the reader think that it's the girl? I can't remember.
Because he's introduced to like the young woman named Catherine. Like, oh, wait, what? Is that her? But yeah. No.
You know what? Fuck it. I got to drink this beer.
Fuck it.
Trying to understand these connections, it's like trying to do some higher math. Just clearing out beers I have. I'm like, I'll make this work somewhere.
Yeah.
And there it is. And I'm going to win the prize for strongest beer tonight. This is a beer from Dogfish Head from years ago that's 17% alcohol.
That's too many percent.
And it's a golden ale brewed with chocolate and sour cherry juice.
How long is this old?
How drunk is you? old enough. Oh my god! It's.
I mean, like I can see a stout.
I think it was bottled in 2015.
Oh god! Do golden ales last that long?
17% alcohol. Things do. This was their 20th anniversary beer.
You're drinking it on their 29th anniversary.
If I'm reading this faint writing correctly, it says 2015, but it could also say any other number because it's really faint. But yeah, it was their 20th anniversary. It says bottled 2015. 20th anniversary. So it was meant to be a beer you didn't have to drink right away. And I didn't. But I had it. I did buy it when it came out. And I've had bottles over the years because every time I've been to Dogfish, they've had this for sale again. It's like they made too much of it or something. And you're like, all right, fuck it. I can't say no to a 17% alcohol beer. And you know.
And if you do, you won't remember drinking it anyway.
It is boozy as shit, which I really never say about beers, but it also smells like you sour tart cherry smell is in there. It smells like overripe fruit. Like,
so they nailed it.
They did, but it's like, someone's like, here, I nailed my recipe for tuna fish cake. And you're like, yeah, you did get that right. That is what it tastes like. But at what cost?
Depends on the price of tuna.
So this is good I experienced it sort of way. I'm glad I didn't save the bottle anymore. So he starts reading the book, and it's a flashback. The first of many flashbacks.
So it's a diary of the woman who's dead, and then when he goes to sleep that night, he like dreams. He thinks he sees her ghost, or he like dreams her ghost, and then shouts like in terror.
Oh no! He ejaculates in terror, Nate. The word ejaculate is said in this book more times than ejaculations happen in a teenage boy's life. Like it is the only word they have for speaking. It's like, I'm going to Penis Town, he ejaculated.
There is a place called Penis Tone.
Penis Tone Loke is the before and after. You didn't know you needed. But they ejaculate constantly. And I was hoping there'd be one that didn't work, right? Like, he ejaculated with his penis or something.
Prematurely.
He ejaculated into her face, but it never, never really happened. So sorry, Nate. I just had to clarify.
So,
about the ejaculation.
In the middle of the night, he like screams stuff. In terror in the middle of the night, and Heathcliff, the owner of the Wuthering Heights, goes to his room and is like, "What? Why the fuck are you screaming?" He's like, "I thought I saw a ghost." And he's like, "Yeah, that fucking ghost. I know. Let me tell you, it's terrible. I never sleep a wink ever. Good night." And then, but it's also like, it kind of sleeps the rest of the night. And then next chapter, he goes back. No, he doesn't go back. This is where, he goes back, gets sick. And then the housekeeper named Nellie is like, "Let me tell you a story." And this is going to be a 300-page story.
And they're out in the country. So this is definitely spoken in country grammar.
God damn it. I hate you so much. Nate doesn't know.
Nate,
and
Nate doesn't want to know that song by Nelly.
Oh, God.
And then, yes, but it was not getting hot in her because it was snowing outside.
It was winter. But he was getting hot in her because he has a fever for 3 weeks.
The beaver. Oh, sorry.
One of the things that happens in this book is every single person is extremely sick all the time and die. Just like
I think that's
constantly.
What life was like in England in 1801.
It must have been because
what medicine did they have besides opening a window?
Everyone is just constantly dying.
There's a part where someone talks about the doc, like someone being ill, and it's like, "I don't want to talk to the doctor. I don't want to hear any more about his pills and his potions." Like, what were those pills?
Someone said, like, "I'm tired of all the leeches."
But, like, what pills did they have in 1801?
It was definitely just powdered mercury or something.
Yeah, here's your lead supplement.
The lead will lead the disease from thine humors.
You need to raise your body temperature here. Eat this coal. It's like,
so they do actually use that. Now,
what's that called? Sarcology is the ridiculous theory that if you eat an animal's liver, it's good for your liver. So it's kind of like Liver King nonsense. But yeah. So that was probably they were thinking, right? Oh, you have the vapors here. Eat this, fart. I don't know. But so everyone's dying constantly. I mean, we all are.
So, okay. So Nelly gets into the story of like this whole long saga where she says, okay.
Well, before we get to the story, because he sees this hot girl at the thing. He's like, hey, is that your wife? He's like, no, my wife's dead. He's like, oh, sorry, my bad. What about the guy over there? Is that her husband? No, her husband's dead. Like, is everyone dead? Yes, the answer is yes. And soon more will be.
I was going to wait to open my beer, but you know what? This is a pretty good time. So everyone's dead and are buried in the rotting earth. Because everyone's just dying. So this is Rotting Earth by Abomination.
Oh, and that's what this book is.
See, we've used that. I was going to say that, but we've used that joke too many times.
It's still good. And they might sponsor us.
Still true. This is a 9.3% double IPA. And it's good and tastes like beer.
That's good.
Yep.
That's a good first step.
That's the drill.
Tastes better than dying.
As having made beer many times, you don't always accomplish that step. So good on them. We're on like chapter 1.5 right now.
We're on the fucking prologue still.
Nothing
but he goes back to the big house where he's renting, and he gets cooped up with Nelly for weeks.
Furtado.
He's like a bird, but he can't fly away.
That's why he kept calling her a sludge. He's a promiscuous girl. And that's it. I'm out of Nelly Furtado songs. All right, Nate.
Yeah, I don't know anymore.
So, okay. She's like, here's what's been going on over here at your place, Thrushcross Grange in Wuthering Heights. So 30 years ago, there was a family that lived here, the Earnshaws. Yeah. And they had two kids. And everyone's name starts with a fucking H in this book. Which one was which again? Oh, God. Anyway, so there's Catherine. Catherine's older brother, Hindley, which I have definitely never heard that name before. And then on a trip to Liverpool, the father comes back with a child. And it's just like,
check out what I found.
We're keeping this one. And I'm naming him Heathcliff.
As his first and last name.
Because this kid, they mention, is a gypsy, a dark-skinned gypsy or some shit.
He is a dark-skinned gypsy in aspect.
Yeah, in aspect. He seems like a dark-skinned gypsy.
He has the countenance of a dirty, swarthy gypsy.
Yeah, so he's like not white, so someone abandoned this kid in the street, and the guy's like, I guess I'll just take this kid home.
It's good luck to have a gypsy child. my favorite gypsy line is in later in the book when they're fighting or something, and I forget which one of those shithead kids says, put him in the cellar, Papa. He's exactly like the son of that fortune teller that stole my tame pheasant.
Oh, that's definitely got to be Hindley. Hindley's a little shit.
Like, but it's like Borat, their fear of gypsies. She stole my tame pheasant.
That's all he had growing up back there.
It's like, he does not pheasant now. And then just
also, for the last week, I have had the Heathcliff cartoon theme song stuck in my head.
I've been trying to remember terrible. A thing about Heathcliff, because I was considering constantly making jokes about Garfield and just pretending I didn't know the difference.
But you don't, like, and then no one knows anything about Heathcliff.
And then, exactly. It's like, and then Heathcliff eats a big lasagna. Like, wrong fucking cat.
I only knew like part of one line and little bits of like what the melody was, so I listened to it again yesterday. I was like, man, I don't remember this shit at all, but it's a full minute and a half theme song. It was definitely a 22-minute show.
That's padding. That's...
Oh, yeah. Also, there was other characters called the Cadillacs, but so like cat, so, you know, props to them.
Yeah. And then he'd be like, exit stage lefty. Oh, that's a different cartoon cat.
That's Snagglepuss. This is everything but Heathcliff.
We have so much more book to talk about, guys.
We have the entire, rounding up, we have the entire book.
So he brings his kid home, and right after he brings his kid home, his wife dies. First one to die.
And then there were four.
So we've got his kids and this stray kid he brought home.
But the important thing is the dad, who his name is, I don't give a fuck, he likes...
Mr. Earnshaw.
He's like, this kid's way better. My kids suck. This free gypsy kid, much better kid. I like him. He gets extra, you know, berries or whatever.
Extra
the fuck
pot
fries
of gruel.
Well, they're rich, so
two pots.
They're
of gruel.
Doing pretty well.
They're doing okay. The people up the street, the Lintons and the Big House, those motherfuckers are pretty rich.
So Catherine and Heathcliff kind of become friends, and Heathcliff is treated really well by the family.
By some of the family. Hindley fucking
Well, we're going to get there. we're going to get there. He's treated well by the family, and he's like, seems to be like pretty happy. But then one thing happens where he and Catherine are just kind of like out in the middle of the day, and they go over to the neighbors, the Lintons, where Kathy gets bitten by a dog. Kathy's the younger one. Catherine gets bitten by a dog and then has to like stay there for weeks.
She's there for 5 weeks because a dog bit her on the foot.
It's touch and go for a while there. You know, they don't know if they're going to lose all of that leg or all of that kid. Because, again, the only medicine they have is putting a damp washcloth on her head.
Somebody's like really mad at Heathcliff after that, and they like they can't see each other. So the father dies. So Catherine's father dies, and then the older brother kind of is now the head of the family. And the older brother doesn't like Heathcliff because his father liked Heathcliff better than him. So he's now really mean to Heathcliff and just treats Heathcliff like a servant or like a laborer. So Heathcliff is like so mad, and then Catherine, now that she's an eligible young woman, Edgar?
Edgar. Edgar is the son of the rich family up the street where she stayed nursing her dog wound.
Yes, this whole, like, another thing that happens multiple times in the book is somebody gets sick and then they have to get nursed back to health and they end up falling in love with them, whoever that was.
Except the narrator who's nursed to health by Nellie, but he doesn't fall in love with her. That we know of.
So Edgar asks Catherine to marry him, and she tells Nellie, like, I love Heathcliff, but he's poor. I can't marry him. I'm going to marry Edgar instead. And Heathcliff hears this and is like, what? Fuck you. And then leaves and is gone for 3 years. And in that 3 years, Catherine and Edgar, they get married. She's pregnant, and he comes back, and now he's rich. How he got rich, I don't know, but apparently this was a believable thing.
We never know. We assume he did something unscrupulous to get rich, because he's like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to fuck these people over.
These people who took me in and then weren't the most nice to me, but they didn't leave me to die in the streets. Fuck them.
Well, the dad was pretty nice, but the... Once the dad dies, Hindley returns from wherever he was with his new wife, and of course she dies, and he has a kid, and Hindley becomes
Harriton or something. Is that name?
Harriton is the new son who spends the rest of the book illiterate. And Hindley is a full blown alcoholic.
One of Heathcliff's many machinations at revenge.
Yes, everyone in this book is either dead or an alcoholic by this point. And
it's like this podcast.
They've all got, would you say, a body by Evil Twin New York City? It's like if all they ate was beer, they would die soon. This is a beer. What is it?
I've heard you can get gout from that.
This is a sour ale brewed with... Oh, God. I forgot about this part. Oh, no.
Piss? Jizz.
This is a sour ale brewed with energy drink syrup and milk sugar.
Oh, God. Oh, so it's just going to taste like a fucking Red Bull.
Like a fucking Monster or a Surge or some shit. Oh, I hate it. It tastes like Red Bull. Oh, like a sweet Red Bull from all the sugar.
Sweet Red Bull. Oh God!
But look, it's like a full size tall boy. Even though the Red Bull cans are tiny for a fucking reason. Well, I guess I'm not sleeping tonight.
Think of what you can do with all that taurine.
Get fucked by a bull. Speaking of getting fucked by a bull, sometimes people fuck us with beer by supporting us on Patreon. And once a month, they get to choose a book. And they chose this book because they hate us. And we get to thank those fine people and recite the names that they sent us to say. And they're never great. Because sometimes people are mean.
Except when it's their actual names. Those are fine.
Those are fine. But I'm sure that one day it'll just be a list of mean things. But until then, thank you.
It's not already.
Just a few.
What is it now?
Today, we'd like to thank Alan, Avery, Black Rabbit of Inlay, Brandon. This Halloween, the drunk guys will be trick-or-treating as the following. Mike will go as Uncle Cracker, Nate will be Joe C., and I will be the immortal Kid Rock. American Badass is still the greatest song ever written. Come at me, Bud Light.
It's.
I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that, yeah.
I mean, follow me. Everything is all right.
Ball with De Beer. Carol.
Yeah.
Catherine. CL. Colton. Derek.
See, these are all names, Jimmy. What are you worried
Dustin,
about?
Dusty Muffin Walloper.
It's like an old-timey wrestler.
Emotional Support Burrito. Frederick. Grace. Hayden. Humid Oyster. Joe P., not Joe C. He can't patronize us because he's dead. Josh. I wish Nate would stop saying my aquarium hobby is easy because, unlike dogs, fish are already wet. Linda. Mr. Slotch. Nathaniel, the good version of Nate with a special relationship to dogs. Poo-Tang Clan. Steven. Thick Richard III. Oh my God, what is this? To finally settle this, Nate's favorite breed of dog is Havanese. Havanese nuts in every dog's mouth.
I think that's a cross, a breed, a Sugundese mix, right? Is that what that is?
William and Zaphod Beeblebrox, the fictional character, and the real person, apparently. So, yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks a lot.
Nate, thanks you too.
And if you are interested in doing that, head to patreon.com, or you could help the podcast out by leaving a review. Just do it right now on whatever thing you're listening. Give it 5 stars.
One for every Bronte.
Yeah, I think there were like 17 of those kids.
There was like 47 Brontes.
Until the, you know,
I heard that fucker had like 30 goddamn Brontes.
If you took off his boot, you could see the Brontes growing off his foot. And this is a very obscure reference to some Perry Tom. And
I keep drinking this fucking Surge beer. It's not terrible. Like, if you keep doing it, you keep forgetting that it's just Red Bull with alcohol in it.
That's basically how Red Bull markets its product. If you keep drinking it, it's not that bad.
Red Bull was just a way to do like 4 Loko before they just combined it in one can so your body could stay ambulatory while your brain shut off.
It's the first Loko of the apocalypse.
So he comes back, Heathcliff.
And he's fucking hot now.
He's hot now, yeah. As that's always
hot happens. And rich.
Hot, rich, but still swarthy.
Redundant, Nate.
He's literally tall, dark, and handsome.
Yeah, tall, which I guess when he's swarthy, right?
He's still swarthy, and I can't imagine the old movies didn't have a slight bit of blackface going on.
No, I think they just ignored that shit because in the Brontes world, you know, not swarthy people were albino. what did they look like?
Capable of tanning meant you were black.
Yeah, basically, they're like, this guy must be at least Sicilian.
These motherfuckers were translucent.
Yeah.
So he comes back and he's like, hey, I'm back in town, and I'm here to fuck, baby. And she's like, hey, I'm married now, but we can like hang out. I missed you. And she says my brother, but like in the family way.
It's not because she sees how tan he is.
No,
she gets confused.
It's because
hey,
they were,
my brother.
Yeah.
She tries to do an elaborate handshake with him. It's like, give me some skin, my brother. He's like, yes, Catherine, I have missed you.
And he's like, I'm here for this to hang and to get some of that sister puss. But also, I'm going to be staying down the road with your brother, who, when he left, fucking hated him. So it's never really expressed how he stays there, but it's really just, I guess, because he has money and Hindley is a full-time alcoholic who has no money and needs money for alcohol.
And while he's there, Heathcliff essentially plays cards. He'll play like gambles and like gets hair. No, he what?
Who, what's
his name again? Hindley.
He gets Hindley to be indebted to him, right?
Yeah, basically mortgaged the entire property to him. So then, when Hindley dies, it'll just belong to Heathcliff.
And he will die because it's this book. Because
everyone dies 17 pages after they're introduced. So Heathcliff, he like is mad at Catherine, or more like he loves Catherine, but also. And then Edgar is like, but you can't come around here anymore because you're clearly going after my wife. And he's like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to marry your sister instead. So Edgar's sister, Isabella, is like, thinks
very,
that Heathcliff
very
is
stupid.
Hot. Yeah. Thinks he's hot. So they elope, but then immediately... she thinks that's a bad idea, but divorces are clearly not a thing because it's not even brought up. It's not even like you couldn't possibly do that. Not even annulment, even especially at the end when the two kids are like literally married, like in prison. No, they're married, like locked up together. And he like forces them to get married. Couldn't get that annulled?
No.
Even back then?
Marriage is sacred.
The last time an English guy got something annulled, he ended up making his own church.
But he was the only one allowed to do it.
Yeah,
no one else.
So then, you know, they get into this fight. Edgar, wasn't it? Edgar, the husband, and Heathcliff get into this huge man-bitch fight where they, like, say, like, oh, I'm going to give you such a bump on the head. And he's like, don't make me. Hold me back. Hold me back, homie. And then they, like, get into a slap fight a little bit. But then Edgar kicks him out, and then Catherine has such a temper tantrum that she gets sick for months.
So she's pregnant, but she stops eating because she's so upset. She just locks herself in her room. And by the way, this happened multiple times where someone was locked in a room for like days on end. How did they go to the bathroom? It's never explained. Did they just like, take dumps in the corner of the room?
They must have had bedpans, no? Isn't bedpan cuts aside?
When Catherine's locked in her room, being sweaty with the fever and anger issues, Nellie is going in to, you know, check on her. And she's like, oh, how sick am I? How long has it been? It's like, it's been 3 days. It's like, oh, I feel like it's been months. Like, it's been 3 days, bitch. Like,
this is rich people.
Wake up and eat a sandwich.
But she's just diarrheaing into a bucket in the corner. and clean that up for me, maid.
Like when they lock themselves in their room, it's really like they don't think of the servants as people. So like they can come in and go, but like just don't talk to me. Empty my shit bucket.
They're like in those Japanese plays when the people come out in all
the
black,
kabuki,
we're supposed to pretend
people
out there. Yeah. Like, oh, that chair just moved.
He's wearing all black. There's no one there.
He's invisible. He's like a ninja.
except their all black clothing is class.
Yes, they have class armor. Protects them from having to.
I don't see pores.
She's like, please, Nelly, clean my bucket. I am shitting for two. Yeah, they never. It's weird. It's weird. This 1847 novel didn't go into the mechanics of shitting into a bucket.
Just the idea of women having opinions and people being mean was enough to them for people that read this to be upset that this book existed. If they had talked about the mechanics of shitting, This would have been worse than the fucking 100 Days of Sodom.
Is that the Mechanics of Shitting? Is that a Tool album? What I think I know, I've heard of that before. Is that Nine Inch Nails?
Oh, that's definitely Nine Inch Nails, yeah.
The Mechanics of Shitting.
Chamber Pot Repertory is the Tool album.
So Catherine is dying because she just like decided to, pretty much. She's just like, fuck it, I'm dying
several
now.
Times here.
Sorry, see you later. Too bad. Just to get back at her husband and Heathcliff. And then, she's like gonna die, and it's clear because in this book everybody gets sick. When they get sick, they're gonna die. So she's going to die, and she's like, "I'm so sorry, Heathcliff." And he's like, "No." And he has this whole famous speech, like, "Haunt me, just don't leave me alone.
Haunt me harder, Daddy.
Haunt me, Daddy."
And this is the like most melodramatic part of the novel, because she's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I just love you so much." And he's like, "No, don't leave me.
Would you haunt me?" I'd haunt me. But it is, as Nate was saying, it's melodramatic. It's like peak romance in the capital R, romantic arts kind of idea. This everything's so emotional.
But they're both such fucking assholes. So,
well, that's why emo teenagers like this book, because they're so over the top in their self-indulgent emotions. Teenagers can identify with it.
Everyone sucks. I suck too.
I bet it's like fucking Catcher in the Rye when they misread it, and because I couldn't actually imagine reading this as a teenager and surviving. But
this is way too dense for any teenager, I think.
So when I mentioned I was reading this at work, two women were like, "Oh, I love Wuthering Heights." And I was like, "Really?" And they were like, "Yeah, I loved it. My 16-year-old self." Oh, and they're like, "I know, Heathcliff." I think they just had
Heathcliff
a fucking crush
sucks.
On Heathcliff. He's a fucking ass.
He's a
sadist.
Sociopath.
But he's hot.
But he's and rich. Society inculcates them young to want that.
He got like miffed because his sister girlfriend left to marry another guy, and so he devoted his entire life to destroying her and his families out of spite. That's not a good thing to do.
Yeah, I think these are people who read it when they were young and they got the wrong message.
Or they watched the Nice movie with Laurence Olivier, which took out all the bad stuff.
So what did he do? Just like smack them with a glove?
I don't know. It's like a more straightforward love story. Oh. Which is like kind of defeats the entire purpose of the book.
Wuthering Lows. More like Wuthering Blows. So then I forget what happens. Oh.
So Catherine dies of spite. And then Isabella is basically treated like a prisoner by Heathcliff. And she eventually runs away. And she escapes with his kid. And then it jumps forward 12 years because she dies off page, presumably after being sick for a month with the consumption.
Well, she fell asleep with the window open.
Oh, yeah. That was a ghost got her. And then his kid shows up back house like, "You're my..." They go to somewhere else. No, the kid goes to Edgar, who is the kid's... the kid, what's the fucking kid's name? God damn it.
Linton.
Oh, yeah, Linton, which is confusing because that's the last name of the other people.
Yep.
So the son, Linton the Younger, ends up with Linton the Elder because that's his uncle. And then Heathcliff is like, "That's my kid. Let me have it." And he's like, "No." And he's like, "I'm going to take the kid." He's like, "All right, bye, kid." And then he moves to the sad house.
Wuthering Heights.
Wuthering Heights, where everybody withers.
So when he's over at the sad house, at this point, Catherine's dead, but her daughter, Kathy, is now like a teenager. Is now like 16 or something like that.
She's a similar age to the other kid.
She's the youngest person to be named Kathy, by the way, because that's typically only a 51-year-old woman who works in HR is named Kathy.
She will be one day.
She's.
I mean, this was like 1790, so...
They hadn't invented HR yet.
So she... I mean, it must be so boring over there. Just there are just like no people around.
There really are no one except your family and like your servants who aren't people to you. So,
and she never goes down to Penis Town.
Oh yeah, we really need to talk about Penis Town. It's like a cliff nearby. I feel like we've been doing
that for 6 years.
Yeah, there's something called Penistone Heights or some shit. Penistone something, but it's called Penis Tone.
I read it as penist one, like it's the penist one.
Oh, like didst penis. Yeah, like
didst. he is bequeathed the penist one.
The penis is like
Lord past Peter tense. Of the North.
Yeah, she goes to Penis Town, and eventually she comes across other kid. It's like, holy shit, there's another kid here. I've been so fucking bored. And then she's like, let's go back to your house because I've got nothing to do and I've been so bored for 12 or 13 years. And Nellie's like, don't talk to that other kid. He sucks ass. But eventually it gets found out like, yeah, actually that kid is your cousin and that swarthy fellow is your uncle and he sucks the worst. And Kathy's like, I have been so bored, bitch. You said there's people nearby? I never saw anyone. Ever.
So they live right next to each other for
like a couple of years. Walk.
Well, okay. So, but they're still the nearest people like yeah, around. But because Heathcliff never lets our like Linton is just too weak to like leave the house. And Edgar is like, you shall not go over there. Kathy doesn't even know that Linton exists. But then one day they meet and it's like, wait, is that a boy over there? And they talk, and it's clear, and then they start, Nellie, the maid, discovers, not long after that, they're sending love letters to each other, but also, it's like, clearly Heathcliff has engineered this whole thing to get Kathy.
He tells Nellie, fall like, in love these kids better get married, that's my plan, because I'm a dickhead.
So that I can inherit Thrushcross Grange, as well as Wuthering Heights, and then I'll own both, ha ha ha. And so he's clearly helping Linton write the love letters to Kathy, but she is, of course, a dumb teenager and doesn't realize what's going on. And Edgar finds out and is like, you shall never see him again. And that just makes Kathy want him even more because, you know, that's the way teenagers act.
Well, then Ellen, the narrator bitch, gets sick for 3 weeks. And so Kathy takes care of her and her father, who is also sick with plot. And, you know, she'll take care of them. But during the day, she's going to horse around and, like, run over and, like, see this hot cousin of hers who's, you know, totally fuckable. And it's definitely legal for them to get married now because they're cousins and it's okay.
Did you know that some senator or maybe it was a representative recently proposed legislation in the United States to make it legal to marry your cousin?
I think that was in a state legislature. I don't think
was it a state was. Legislature?
It's still legal here in New York.
It's like half of the states make it specifically illegal to marry your cousin, and the other half are like, good, you do you, man. Or
oh, maybe he's got a really hot cousin. Closely
related to you, man. Though it's actually not as, you know, and I don't have very hot cousins, I don't think, but like it's not as bad genetically as you would think. It's really just bad for your soul to do it. It's a bad thing.
Yeah.
The British are doing at this it for point, these two families,
these two families have been so intercousined that that can't be good for anyone.
Intercousined? That's inter-cousined. A Jamiroquai album.
And also, like, all their names are like, my last name is your first name, and my first name is your last name. And Heathcliff is just like, I'm a cat. And then...
my last name is my first name.
Meow. So, you know...
Heavens to Murgatroyd.
I think that's also Snagglepuss. No. So she's... Kathy is surreptitiously seeing her cousin on the DL. And eventually, she just gets, like, taken and, like, locked up.
She goes over... Kathy and Nellie go over to Wuthering Heights to see Linton because he says he's dying, I think, or
and he probably is.
But, but they
statistically,
I mean, he's clearly.
I mean, he's coughing up blood at this point, and he's like always been a sick kid. So they're just being born sick at this point just to save us time.
But he's also like a sad little bitch. He's like so annoying. But then Heathcliff like locks them in the house and is like, I demand that you get married, that you marry my son.
Which is how it works.
And just like hell holds them, like kidnaps them basically. And it's like, you must marry my son.
Because he wants them to get married before her dad dies so that they can work out all the...
And before his son dies. Yeah,
that too.
He's also going to die. And so they end up getting married in a... They end up doing the ceremony. It doesn't say that they have sex, but maybe they don't. I mean, she doesn't get pregnant, so you would think that would happen immediately in a book.
I think they get married, the dad dies, and then the Linton, like, she moves over to there, and like even before they can bang, like he dies, the kid.
This all happened in the space of about 4 days.
Yeah, everybody's just dying of whatever the fuck you get, being around no people. So I don't know what communicable diseases exist when there's no one to communicable with.
They didn't wash their hands for 20 seconds
when they touched they probably have just shit-covered hands.
Oh, absolutely. Every bowel movement is like they've just been in Tijuana for a month.
It's full of donkey gum? Anyway, so the dad, Edgar, dies, and immediately, like that night, Heathcliff sends over his lawyer, who happened to be nearby, despite them being days from any people, and he's like, this house is now mine, and he takes over everything, and Nellie's like, well, that's the end of the story. I hope you feel better now. He's like, I no longer have diarrhea, and then he leaves, and you're like, I wonder what happened.
My legs work again.
And then he returns a year later. And of course, Heathcliff is dead. And he's like, what the fuck happened? Like, dude, didn't you listen to any of the story? Everyone dies. And he's like, after you left, Heathcliff starved himself to death out of spite so he could be with Kathy or some shit.
And he said, and then like, so Nellie is saying that, and Heathcliff told me that he dug up her grave. He dug up Catherine's grave. But I couldn't tell if he meant like the night that Catherine died or if it was some other time.
It was when, I think it was when Edgar died so they could be buried next to each other. They dug her up too so he could like hug her corpse like a real creep.
But this is like decades later.
Yeah, this is like 15, this is like,
hey, that's just good.
Years later.
The peat really preserves it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's insulating. But yeah, then he bribed a sexton, which is a euphemism for something weird, so that he would be buried with her also. And so he just lays down in the street after not eating for a few days and dies while smiling.
A life well lived.
Also, that whole section opened with this sentence, which I thought was hilarious. 1802, this September I was invited to devastate the moors of a friend in the north. Like, what does that mean?
That sounds like the sentence you say, you know, like right after we ate a lot of Taco Bell before going out.
Well, I've got to go home. I've got to devastate the moors.
I have to devastate.
I'm going to go to Penistone Heights and devastate the moors.
What was the other one you texted? Scunthorpe or something?
Scunthorpe.
Scunttown.
A real place in England that needs to change its name because of web filters.
But anyway, yeah, he comes back and Nellie tells him, like, oh, he's dead too. And then the guy's like, is that kid still fuckable? And he's just like, get out of here, man. Go away. Also, she says she warned Heathcliff, like, I don't think it's right to wander out of doors. Instead of being in bed, it is not wise at any rate this moist season. It's like, oh, right, it's the moist season. Stay indoors, kids.
Oh, no. That's an upsetting phrase.
Yeah, well, and then it's over. Everybody's dead. Kathy the Younger is still alive, I guess. Nellie's alive. Harriton the Simpleton, she was teaching him how to read. Did they shack up in the end? I don't remember.
I think they did.
They kind of did, because they're the only two characters left.
This is where the love finally conquers all part actually happens in the book, because that's what kind of book it is.
She married the guy she taught to read and who is her uncle or something. I don't know. Or it's her other cousin. It's a cousin in the other direction. Right. So she still ended up marrying a cousin. So, you know, job well done. And that's the end. And this is a classic novel.
Why? Well, part of it was just that at the time, there weren't that many books. So, like, how many books came out that year?
Seven?
Like, eight. Yeah. So, this was like, it was like, wow, this is better than, like, four of them. It's a classic. Instant classic. That was part of it. There just weren't that many things.
But in typical British fashion, all eight were on the Booker long list.
This made like the list of 100 greatest novels in the English language.
Clearly, we're wrong as usual. But
oh yeah, I mean, honestly, like of these books that we have read, you know, like the Brontes and the Austens, I thought this was the best one. It was definitely the most interesting because it wasn't just about like. Some perfect little girl wants to find a husband who's misunderstood but actually is a nice guy. So it was just more interesting because people were actually shitty. And I kind of like that it pissed everybody off back in the day. It was like, oh, these people are mean. But it was, I want to say, 50% too long.
Every sentence was 50% too long.
Yeah, that adds up.
I think Nate and I would have rounded up to 100% too long. But... What's important about the book and why people study it and give a fuck about it, it was different than what had come before it, apparently, in terms of these characters being more
people.
Complex and having dark sides that you see. And there is some elements of like gothic stuff in there, but it's really not a gothic book. It's more like about the... emotional and psychological drama of the book. That's what people seem to care about when you read
it. It didn't I read really exist like, why before is this thing?
Yeah. Well, it got better.
Like there were like villains, I guess, in other books.
But they were just bad. Like they didn't have an origin story.
Just am mean and I'm going to tie someone to the railroad tracks. But this was like, when you treat people
once
like shit,
somebody
they grow up to
them.
Be assholes.
And there might have been, and I don't know how many books earlier had done the like multiple point of view thing, even though it kind of doesn't matter who's telling the story that much.
Well, I mean, that is another thing that people talk about in this book is that this is kind of an unreliable narrator story.
I don't think that they thought of that in 1847.
I don't think you're supposed to not believe the narrator.
We're supposed to trust this woman as a good-natured pauper who remembers everything. We're not supposed to question her
I mean, validity. Sometimes you're getting like, and then Nellie told me all this stuff. So you're getting like Lockwood's version of what Nellie told him. So it's possible, yes, that like that concept didn't exist then. I don't know.
I just can't imagine that. What was a pretty new concept, the idea of like, I'll have this told and out of order a little bit and in flashbacks with the frame that there was that this person in their first novel was also like, and you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to put in this thing where there's a little bit of a mystery because they could all be lying or mistaken and not make an overly heavy-handed thing of it because it wouldn't change much. Like,
I mean, it might if it did because it's from Nellie's perspective 90% of the time, and she hates Heathcliff. And yeah, he did all these things, objectively shitty things, but maybe there's a little more nuance to it. It's just like, look at these shitty rich kids and me just try my best and cleaning up all their night poops for 30 years. No one said anything about poor Nellie suffering through the thing. And, you know, fuck these people. They all suck. And they did suck. But Who knows?
There's a part where Catherine is still alive. Before, okay, when Catherine is like, fucking, I hate everyone. I'm just going to die. And then Edgar is like, fucking fine, go ahead. And just, I had a moment of sympathy for the maid. Because the maid has to, like, somehow be in between these two fucking snobby rich people.
Yeah.
Who are, like, just being so stupid. But you don't have any power. And you have, like, who do I side with? Anyway. That must have been a thing that happened a lot. I'm sure people read that resonated with people at the time.
Also, there was a part where, like, when Catherine's still a kid, and she like tells Nelly something, and Nelly's like, "Did this? You did this thing?" And she's like, "Fuck you, you lying servant!" And she like pinches her. It's like, "Ah, you have bruised me. Look at this wound. Like, I did nothing of the sort, servant." And he's like, "I've got wounds right here." And it's like, "Fuck you, lady." And it's like, yeah, those kids probably sucked. They probably sucked. But she also hated Heathcliff for not much real reason when he was a kid, other than he's like, he's kind of a sulky little bitch. She's like, dude, they make him sleep outside because the kid hates him. Like, he got picked up off the streets and now they treat him like a slave. Like, you know, he's got a little bit right to be pissed. He went a little far. He went a little far with the whole, you know, blackmail marriage incest thing and desecration of a corpse.
See, their mistake was not just making him a servant. Yeah. Servants in the book never complain about their place. They're just like, this is what it is. I serve these assholes. And I don't even think they're assholes. I just think, oh, look how beautiful young fair miss is. Shit like that.
With her ringlets of blonde hair and her, you know, all dead family.
It's like they all have perms. Everyone has fucking ringlets. And or their hair is made of chainmail. But instead they try to
against the Moors.
They split the difference with Heathcliff. They don't treat him like a servant, but they don't treat him like family. And so he doesn't know where to go.
And this was another, maybe a first example, or, you know, one of the first known examples of a kid, you know, being a little, you know, having difficulty, and then everyone abuses him in his life, and he grows up to be shitty. And you're like, wow, he must have always been shitty. Whereas, like, you know, in Oliver Twist, you know, he was a rich kid, but he got tricked into thinking he was poor, but he was still good because he was born rich. It was his goodness inside of him. Whereas this was like, was he just always shitty because he was poor to begin with, or did they make him shitty? Like, I don't know if that was a thing that she was thinking about when he wrote this, but it's possible. Like, as not difficult this book was, because it wasn't difficult. I mean, there's a lot in there I didn't get. But it was definitely, it had more going on than the other rather dry, you know, books of this era that I have enjoyed none of. I still didn't enjoy it.
So I did not like this one. I found the plot really fucking confusing.
It was because everyone had the same
really,
name.
Yeah, that part of it, everyone had the same name. And just too many things happened, which I know I always complain when not enough things happen. So this is quite inconsistent of me. But no, there's just too much stupid shit that happens in this and that didn't need to. Though I guess also the other big problem is that I didn't really care about the characters. I didn't.
Well, they're all bad. They're all bad people.
I think people who like this book feel for Heathcliff and feel for Catherine and feel for the kids, and you know, and so if you feel for them, then it's all sad and tragic and they loved each other and oh, so sad, and that would make the book like a good book because you felt the thing. But I just didn't, and so it was just like, oh, why do all these stupid things have to happen? So I didn't like it. Now, as for how it ranks with the others, I think Jane Eyre is better. I don't know. Maybe it's because...
That's the one with the secret wife in the attic.
The secret Jamaican wife, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I put on this poll by accident because I forgot we read it. Because I just didn't remember anything about that thing.
You aired?
I did.
Maybe because I went through that book a lot more slowly and carefully, because I read it in high school and already kind of knew what was going on, it was a little bit kind of easier or just made it a little bit more enjoyable because I knew it happened, rather than having to fight through this complicated mess in only a couple days It was like, oh, come on. When is this over? Come on. I was kept reading the plot synopsis just to be like, what is going on? And I read the whole thing. And then I'm like, what? Okay, I think I know what's going on. But I definitely also noticed, like, I'm almost at the end of the plot synopsis. Why is there so much book left? It's because there's so many things in this that don't even matter, that they're not even included in a plot synopsis. It's kind of like, well, why did that happen?
It's like all those 1800s books where everyone's like, then you did this thing, and I felt this way about mine heart and how it has gotten this thing, and here you are besmirching upon thine effervescence. And it's like, okay, yeah. So every conversation was wrought with old-timey word emotion. And
overwrought.
You know, nothing was actually happening. It was just people whining for 40% of the book.
And I also thought, because I really noticed, like, the language that's used. I'm like, man, if I could fucking retake those SATs, I would do so well. Because I read it. I when I was reading it, I was like, I really do know all these words. Holy shit. Now that I'm a grown up. I'm the smartest
goddamn high schooler around.
Yes. I'm way smarter than most 18-year-olds. So I'm glad, because if I had to read this as a kid, I'd be like, what the fuck are they talking about? Oh, I do not know what most of these words, but I actually do know what the words mean now, and it was made it a lot easier.
Because this is 1,000 books later.
And yes.
Other things that you've read and had to write for. Yeah. It's almost
two
as if.
Two college degrees. Yeah, of course. That's why.
It's almost as if the SAT is not a very good test of anything. It's
almost like the factor that determines, that is the most determinative of how you might do on the SATs, is how much you prepare for the SATs.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, I will say I'm glad I never have to do it again. But that is take the SATs or read this book. I'm just like, there's so much in here that you could write about. You know, you could write, like, you know, if you're in a college class or something like that, or if you're a critic, you know, the book is a lot of stuff to think about that probably wasn't intentional on part of Bronte. You know, like the race of Heathcliff. Is he, because they use a bunch of old-timey racist words for him that they mean like Indian sailor or gypsy or shit like that. So it's like, is he white or something else? I don't think she just really wanted to make him an outsider. You know, I don't think that writers in 1847 were conscious of race to the point where they're like, I'm going to put this little nugget in here.
Maybe she wanted to make it seem like, so like anyone walking by in this, you know, podunk, but
they would just tell,
he's like, that guy's not one of them.
Which you could tell in those days.
Because there were six people.
But they were also the only ones that weren't like toothless. And I mean, the wealthy were significantly just taller because they didn't have such childhood malnutrition. Like you could see walking down the street, oh, that guy's not poor because he's bigger than the rest of the people.
They traded it with the incest thing, though. So occasionally you got a real fucked up one.
Well, that's why there aren't a race of 7.5 foot tall English basketball players today. Nature finds a way to check that. But like, is race one of the things in the book that makes it interesting? I mean, I guess if you're a person writing your PhD dissertation today, you'd write about it. But really, I think, you know, the thing that talking to people who like this book is that they think it's a love story. And I think they're fucking stupid. This is not a love story.
I mean, I read some, you know, people's commentary on it that think it's an amazing book and they really like it. And they're like, it's not really a love story. Because, like, some people, yes, they see, oh, it's a misunderstood love story, though. But some people are like, no, it's good because it's more complicated than that. And, like, actually, these people all suck. And,
you know,
like, none of them are good.
This is a love.
Interesting.
This is a love story. Like, Old Boy is a love story.
Oh, God.
I forget the character. I forget everybody's name in Old Boy. Nate, did you see Old Boy?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, you got to watch
the
original.
It's a Korean movie, and also they made a white version.
A dog shit white version? Don't watch that one. Watch the Korean one.
It's a fantastic film. Really,
revenge,
like,
film.
Considered one of the best films made in our lifetime.
Certainly the best Korean film I've ever seen.
Ooh, I don't know. It's up. It's up. It's up there. The host is pretty good. It's a sea monster. Everyone loves sea monsters.
But without ruining anything, that's pretty good too. There's a huge. It's a big revenge thing, and like the whole point is the guy's like, why was I? Someone's seeking revenge. He has to get revenge if something terrible happens to him. But you find out that there was a love story in there. There's a couple love stories in Old Boy. You should go watch it. Go pirate it.
Yeah.
But this is a revenge book. It's about a sick, monomaniacal dude. And then once he gets his revenge.
Used in the book.
And once he gets his revenge, he dies.
He's Captain Ahab, but Moby Dick is fucking his sister.
Cut it out, dude. Not cool. I think this is the kind of book you need to read in a classroom. I needed a Sherpa.
I think it definitely would help. Or is it a kind of book you like really take your time with? Like, I didn't read it in a few days, but I read it in like a week, and it was still like you have to really burn through it because it's not crazy long. It's pretty long, but it's just so dense. Like, there's so many words in it. Like, there's no breathing space at all.
I was thinking about that. Actually, if I had to read this in a class, your professor would be like, okay, for next Tuesday, read fucking Wuthering Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And I read this in a week, and at a certain point, I was like, I'm going to start skimming now because I'm never going to finish.
I mean, once you get to like any like long conversation, you can kind of skim through it because nothing gets developed in those. It's just people complaining at each other about their feelings, as they are in all these books from this fucking era.
Well, they had nothing else to do. They had outlawed bear baiting. So what were they supposed to do with their time?
You get consumption and die.
Yeah.
It sounded so boring to live there where they're like, oh, but I have nothing but a few books that I read over and over again. And it's the only thing that makes me happy.
Yeah. It sounds pretty bleak.
There are no other people. There are no other people my age. I go and sit under a tree and read. Because imagine if you have servants and you don't have to do any housework. I mean, it both sounds awesome. And there's nothing else.
But could that be that we're saying that because of our overstimulated world we live in?
Oh, like for sure. I think there's a comfortable medium somewhere in there.
There is, but do you think that those people went through their lives being like, oh my God, someone needs to invent something. I'm bored. Or were they just like, this is what you do, and I'm going to go sit and stare at a snail for 15 minutes right now.
Well, there was like when Isabella moves into Wuthering Heights, and she's like, get me a thing. And the lady's like, fuck you. And she's like, oh my God, I've got to do stuff for myself? Oh no.
Summon the maid. Ma'am, there is no maid here.
It's just Joseph, and he speaks in whatever version of jive they had in like 1847 England.
It was Jar Jar Binks' dialect.
It was like reading like Huck Finn level like dialect. It's like, what the fuck is this guy saying?
Every time that guy spoke, I skipped it. I said, someone's going to translate this.
He never said anything important either. He was just like, everybody sucks ass and I'm old and poor. Fuck you.
So I think no one should read this for pleasure because it's hard and it's confusing, I think, and it sucked.
I think if you have to pick a Bronte, like you had to do one, do this one. But other than that,
no.
I don't know.
Jane Eyre. It's actually easier.
It's easier, but it's like I didn't even remember that we fucking read it. I retained nothing of that.
We haven't read any Anne Bronte books. She only has two, so.
Well, Emily only had one.
Fucking,
because
you know
true to her characters, she died of consumption a year later.
But Anne Bronte has two, and I don't know how many Charlotte has. I can only name Jane Eyre, but she probably only has three, because didn't they all die pretty young?
I mean, yeah, that's what everyone did.
No, but like the Brontes, like there were a bunch of them. Anne Bronte died at 29.
Well, God.
Branwell, who was...
Honestly, I didn't remember there was an Anne.
She wrote Agnes Grey, I think is the name of her book, and the Tenant of Wildfell Hall. Then they had a brother, Branwell, which is a cereal. And he was the...
It's right next to Super Colon Blow on the...
He was a...
He became addicted to alcohol and laudanum.
Yeah, he just fucking killed himself. Emily Bronte made it to 30. Who's left? Then there's Charlotte, the other one. 38. Jesus. Dad died at 84.
He used up all the Bronte juice.
The mother, how old is she? 38. Shit out a bunch of kids and died. I mean, they had an interesting, you know, they were interesting people for their time. The dad was like super progressive on education.
Like he thought, you know, women should have education?
He really heavily tutored his kids and encouraged them to be creative.
I guess it fucking worked. They're like the Jackson 5 of writing. I'll leave it to you to guess who's Tito.
They have two other kids. I don't know if they did something. One died at 10. Oh, she probably
one invented much. Yahtzee.
That's Yahtzee Bronte. I think that's a rapper. Little Yahtzee.
There's actual Lil Yachty is a rapper.
Little Yahtzee Vert or whatever.
That's Lil Uzi Vert.
Yeah. Little Yahtzee Vert Bronte. Man, and this guy outlived every one of his kids. That's Brett Steiger and his wife. He pissed off God. Well, I'm not looking forward to the next one, but this book didn't do it.
We've got to be out of important Brontes at this point.
Well, the only one left. Yeah, we gotta get Anne, and then we've done the hat trick. Sorry, the books all have sucked. The shat trick. They're all terrible.
You know they were wearing hats, though, because not wearing a hat would be an enormous breach of conduct.
That's the most important
thing. And probably deadly.
Yeah, that's why they all died. They went outside without a hat on.
Where's your bonnet? There is a part where Heathcliff gets locked out overnight when the dog eats the girl's leg. And then Nellie's like, what the fuck? You would have died? You're going to catch your death. Because, you know, a strong breeze could carry death with it. But, yeah, I don't think anyone should read the book. But I'm sure we fucked it up. So come tell us what you thought.
Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter at drunkguysbc for Bronte. Cock.
Go to Facebook and Instagram at drunkguysbookclub.
And go leave a review for the podcast. Make it a good one. And you know what? People have asked if I'll give them a dollar at this point. No, I would have never given you a dollar.
But someone did finally ask.
Yes. Wait, Nate just gave a thumbs down emoji. Nate's been asking for this fucking dollar.
I don't know.
We don't count, Nate.
Why did that happen? I just want to know why that happened.
Also, you can join us on Goodreads, where I'm not going to give you a dollar. Fuck you.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.